Welcome to the Fifth Kind. In 1984, a 26-year-old woman appeared on the beach of Anloga, a coastal town in the Kita district of the Volta region of Ghana, West Africa. When she walked into her family home, her relatives embraced her with joy and confusion. She had been missing 3 years. Her family was full of questions. Why had she vanished? Where had she gone? And what had happened to her in the intervening years? The story the young woman told left her family worried and confused. The young woman explained that she had been kidnapped while walking on the beach and taken to a community far away where she had been held captive. She had lived among her captives for 3 years and in that time had been forced to bear children. But the most shocking part of the young woman's story was still to come. Her family pressed her to tell them where she had been living, why she hadn't been able to contact them, and who had taken her. Finally, she told them she had been taken from the beach to an underwater base. The people had taken her in order for her to produce children, and most disturbing of all, the people who had taken her were not human. They were the Mamiwate people.
You can find the Mamiwate tradition all across Africa and into the Caribbean. On first hearing, it sounds like Western stories of mermaids or the ancient Greek stories of the sirens. The Mamiwate people are described as being very beautiful, usually the female, part human and part aquatic, and they abduct people around water. Now, you might think, oh, this just sounds like a cautionary tale warning young men to behave and stay away from the water and stay safe. But the aspect of the mythology that interests me in particular is this narrative of human abductions going back hundreds and maybe thousands of years. Now, what this young lady told her family, she did not tell as a story of convenience. My family, in fact, is just 1 degree removed from that family. And I can tell you that that was not a story she told to help herself. If you think about it, if you return after 3 years with a story like that, it's not going to get you readily accepted. You're not going to get a job. You're not going to get a promotion or any advantage from it. You're more likely to be locked up and medicated. And knowing that, when people are willing to share a story like that, I think it deserves some serious attention. And the fact that this narrative is so wide and goes back so far is one that I think deserves a more careful listen. It's actually part of a much bigger narrative and a far more ancient one. And I'm talking about the Book of Enoch.
The origins of the Book of Enoch are rooted in the Hebrew tradition. Scholars generally agree that the various parts of the Book of Enoch were authored in the 2nd and 3rd centuries BCE. The writing may have encapsulated an oral tradition going even further back in history. The book is titled with the name of Enoch, whom the Book of Genesis names as the grandson of Noah.
Enoch is probably the Bible's first abductee. The Bible says that Enoch lived a long life and he walked with God. That's the phrase it uses. And different people have interpreted that in different ways, but it may simply mean that he really did go on journeys with God. And then finally it says, and he was not. In other words, he was taken into the heavens alive. Now, I read that as a summary of what we have in the Book of Enoch. It unpacks those journeys and that final journey in phenomenal detail.
The Book of Enoch comprises several works. In the Book of the Watchers, Enoch tells the story of human females being abducted and impregnated by beings who arrive on Earth from their stations in the sky. It goes on to describe the writer's journeys through the cosmos, discovering truths previously hidden from humanity concerning other dimensions. The Book of Parables speaks more of Enoch's journeys and speaks of God's judgment of the watchers and plans for humanity. It holds out the promise of a heavenly Messiah. In the Book of Heavenly Luminaries, Enoch is shown around the galaxy as an entity called Uriel instructs him in astronomy and the laws of the cosmos. The Book of Enoch's accounts of interstellar travel are not the only narratives of ET contact in the Hebrew tradition. The prophet Ezekiel also reported an experience of being picked up in a flying craft. In his experience, a human-like pilot flies him around various cities of ancient Iraq before finally depositing him in Tel Aviv.
The Book of Ezekiel is an example of what's known as apocalyptic literature. And that's where the writer has seen or experienced something really bizarre, and they simply describe what they saw and experienced for the reader to try and work out what it means, because they know it means something.
In the past, Bible scholars have assumed that Ezekiel was describing a vision, but might the author have been describing something real and material, something that today we would call an alien abduction?
Ezekiel does not report this as a vision. He talks about it in very concrete terms. He tells us where he was when he was picked up, where he was flown over in Iraq, where he was dropped off in Tel Aviv, and what state he was in when he was dropped off. And it's kind of amusing, really, because all the time he's being flown around, the pilot, and he describes the pilot as he was like a human being. The pilot is trying to talk to him about religion and politics. Ezekiel is completely distracted. He's looking around at the craft he's being flown in, and he's thinking, how does this thing work? This metal is amazing. And the glass, he's never seen anything like it, so he describes it as a crystal canopy. How do these wheels work, he's thinking? And what's that roaring noise that happens right behind us every time we move? So he's completely fascinated by this craft that he calls the glory. It's a bit silly of us to read that and say, oh no, that was just a vision. Ezekiel doesn't say it was. And it's a bit silly of us to say we know better than him what he was describing. I think when we dismiss it and say it was a vision, we're really doing to Ezekiel what we do to all returnees and think we know better than what they're describing. We sort of put our fingers in our ears as soon as there's anything like an ET element, because it offends our worldview. The worldview that says we're alone in the universe, we've never been visited. End of story.
The claims of the Book of Ezekiel find support in other ancient literature. Flying and space-faring craft are described in the Hindu texts of the Bhagavad Gita. Similar craft are depicted in the ancient wall art of Egypt and Mesoamerica. In the Book of Enoch, the writer describes journeys which took him far beyond those of Ezekiel, and even far beyond our solar system.
Ezekiel's travels in this craft around Iraq were just earthbound travels. He was just flying. In the Book of Enoch, the writer goes even further, and he describes being piloted around the galaxy by an entity called Uriel. And what he's being shown is the positions of the stars, how they relate to each other, where the powerful ones reside. And what's so interesting about that is this aspect of accurate astronomical detail is an element of mythologies all around the world. And you can think about the Mayan calendar, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, the Sumerians. They all had amazing astronomical information. And we think, how did they have access to that information so long ago? One of the most dramatic examples is the Dogon people of Mali, who have all this precise information about the Sirius star system. Information we haven't had until the last 20 years, they've had for centuries and centuries. And when the researchers who picked up on this asked the Dogon people, how did you get this information? They said, oh, well, the people who told us this are from Sirius C. They even knew that Sirius B was a white dwarf. We didn't even know what one of those was until very, very recently. And so this aspect of complex astronomical data is a pattern within the world mythologies. And Enoch's explanation is the same. He got this astronomical information from Uriel, an extraterrestrial entity who took him in his craft around the galaxy and explained all these things to him.
The Book of Enoch describes in dramatic detail a period in which 200 watchers arrive on planet Earth and begin abducting human females. With these women, the watchers produce hybrid beings who are human in form, but far larger than normal human beings. Mythologies around the world corroborate the Book of Enoch's account of abductions by an extraterrestrial presence exiled on planet Earth. Although quoted in the New Testament letter of Jude and accepted as scripture by the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, the Book of Enoch has never been included in the internationally accepted canons of scripture for either Judaism or Christianity.
The fact that the Book of Enoch isn't one of the canonical books of the Bible, I don't think is particularly important. Clement of Alexandria, among other church fathers, quoted it as scripture. And the narrative that it holds is really an unpacking of narratives you can find referenced all through the Bible. You can find it in Genesis, Ezekiel, and in the Gospels and New Testament. Its story of 200 watchers coming and interbreeding with human beings and producing giants, that's a narrative that's in the Bible, and you can go all around the world and it repeats in mythologies from every culture. You can find it in the Mesoamerican story. You can find it in African stories. You can go to Greece, go to India, go to the Nordic countries. You can go anywhere on the planet. And that story of abductions and interbreeding with another kind of being that came from the sky repeats over and over again.
In the West, these ancient accounts of abduction and interbreeding have been read as fables. The beings exiled to Earth are interpreted as mythical beings, are nothing more than literary creations. Some interpret the Watchers and the Mamiwota people as spiritual beings rather than a species like ourselves. But this explanation fails to account for the narrative of interbreeding. Many of the Christian and shamanic traditions of Africa take a more concrete view.
These watchers, as the Book of Enoch calls them, are described as physical creatures just as much as we are. They have powers that set them apart from human beings. They can travel great distances with great rapidity, maybe interdimensionally. They're not from Earth. They come from the sky, and they intervene harmfully in human affairs. And that includes the stories of abduction and interbreeding. Now, by any reading, that sounds an awful lot like an extraterrestrial.
Serious studies have been made into the area of ET abduction syndrome. The late Professor John Mack was Harvard's head of clinical psychology. In the 1990s, U.S. Defense tasked Professor Mack with investigating the psychology of military personnel who had filed reports of close encounters with extraterrestrials. As he continued his investigation, patterns began emerging in their reports. His technique included supplementary questions, which gave his subjects no opportunity to prepare or collude in what they were describing. Professor Mack then widened his sample base to include civil aviation operatives who had filed similar reports. The conclusions he brought to the U.S. defense was that these were not cases of psychosis or hallucinations. These operatives had been in contact with something real that merited further study. In 2009, Pope Benedict XVI called on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences to convene a colloquium to discuss the theological implications of contact with other civilizations. The colloquium gathered 30 leading scholars and theologians. Among those who brought its findings to the press was one of the Vatican's most senior experts in paranormal phenomena, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, a leading exorcist for the Roman Catholic Church. He explained that when contactees and abductees report their close encounters, they are not describing psychotic episodes or demonic encounters. Rather, they have been in contact with a completely different kind of entity, one which merits more serious study. Another area deserving more serious study was identified by the famous astrophysicist Carl Sagan in the 1960s. His comments were prompted by another ancient mythology concerning beings who were in appearance part human and part aquatic. The Apkallu were beings described in a Babylonian mythology that was written down by a Greek priest called Berossus in the 3rd century BCE.
Berossus described the Apkallu as appearing part human and part aquatic. And that image of a hybrid human-aquatic species repeats all around the world, including in the Mamiwata narratives of Africa and the Caribbean. But what Berossus had to say about the Apkallu is really interesting. And he talks about one of their leaders, Oannes. And he lived for a period among human beings on Earth. And he and the other Apkallu were responsible, so he said, for teaching human beings about their place in the universe. And he provided the humans, and specifically the ancient Sumerians, with the basic tools and technologies of civilization. Well, could an intervention from an extraterrestrial civilization like the Apkallu explain why all of a sudden, seemingly from out of nowhere, civilization springs up in ancient Sumer, complete with mathematics, complex astronomy, civil engineering, streetscapes, banking, a legal system, money, culture, and literature? I mean, that's a phenomenon that requires major explaining. And that sudden leap forward in human evolution, I think, makes better sense if we allow for the possibility of an intervention. And that's exactly what the story of the Apkallu is, and just how interesting that their features relate to how the Mamiwata people are described.
In 1962, while at Berkeley, the young Carl Sagan wrote a paper titled Direct Contact Among Galactic Civilizations by Relativistic Interstellar Spacecraft. In the paper, he wrote, "There is the statistical likelihood that Earth was visited by an advanced extraterrestrial civilization at least once during historical time." On page 497 of his study, he speculates that the number of such visits could be as many as 10,000. Sagan wrote, "There are other legends which deserve serious study in the present context. As one example, we may mention the Babylonian account of the generation of the Sumerian civilization by the Apkallu, representatives of an advanced, non-human, and possibly extraterrestrial society." 4 years later, in a collaboration with the Ukrainian scientist Ayush Slavovsky titled Intelligent Life in the Universe, Carl Sagan wrote, "Stories like the Oannes legend deserve much more in critical studies than have been performed heretofore, with the possibility of direct contact with an extraterrestrial civilization as one of the many possible explanations."
I think in the West, we've tended to have a rather patronizing attitude to these mythologies. So we read an explanation of where Sumerian civilization came from, and because it involved extraterrestrial beings who appear part human and part aquatic, we just throw it in the fiction bin. Instead of asking, what's going on there? What is this telling us? What memory might be buried in here? Or we read in Greek literature, cultural references to the sirens, these mermaid-like creatures that would lure seafarers under the waves. And we say, oh, that's just fiction. That's just old wives' tales. Or we listen to the Mamiwata stories and say, ah, that's just a story for parents to frighten their children into behaving, you know, a bit like you better be good or the bogeyman will get you. But I think to dismiss the ancient mythologies that way is a mistake, because we're dismissing a narrative that is centuries old to describe a phenomenon that is centuries old.
In the United States of America alone, more than 500,000 people go missing every year. In the year 2018, 612,846,000 new people were registered as missing. Some are cases of misadventure. An unconfirmed number proved to be cases of slavery and trafficking. Others are cases of violent crime. Thankfully, the majority of missing persons returned, and some are later found. However, approximately 15%, around 90,000 each year, remain unexplained.
Year after year, thousands of people go missing just in America's national parks. Actually, the number is so disturbing, the federal authorities officially don't report or even keep track of the figures. And when I say go missing, I don't mean, oh, they wandered off the path and didn't come back. They got lost. I'm talking about people in the middle of a baseball game, in the middle of a conversation, walking down a path, they vanish. Now, we have no mythology, no science, no explanation of any kind to deal with that. And I think those figures ought to bother us a lot more than having to listen to the report of returnees telling us a story that offends us just because of our worldview. So I'm with Monsignor Balducci and I'm with John Mack in saying that what they have encountered is something real that merits serious study.
One fascinating aspect of the Book of Enoch is that of the extraterrestrial being Eero, who tutors Enoch with an education in the cosmos, speaking of humanity's place in the universe, the astronomical home of the powerful ones, and the workings of the solar system. The description advanced knowledge being imparted by people from the stars is a theme that can be found in other indigenous mythologies, and sometimes with surprising proofs of their claims.
Ezekiel's travels in this craft around Iraq were just earthbound travels. He was just flying. In the Book of Enoch, the writer goes even further, and he describes being piloted around the galaxy by an entity called Uriel. And what he's being shown is the positions of the stars, how they relate to each other, where the powerful ones reside. And what's so interesting about that is this aspect of accurate astronomical detail is an element of mythologies all around the world. And you can think about the Mayan calendar, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, the Sumerians. They all had amazing astronomical information. And we think, how did they have access to that information so long ago? One of the most dramatic examples is the Dogon people of Mali, who have all this precise information about the Sirius star system. Information we haven't had until the last 20 years, they've had for centuries and centuries. And when the researchers who picked up on this asked the Dogon people, how did you get this information? They said, oh, well, the people who told us this are from Sirius C. They even knew that Sirius B was a white dwarf. We didn't even know what one of those was until very, very recently. And so this aspect of complex astronomical data is a pattern within the world mythologies. And Enoch's explanation is the same. He got this astronomical information from Uriel, an extraterrestrial entity who took him in his craft around the galaxy and explained all these things to him.
Is this theme of advanced knowledge purely fictional? Is it a cover for prehistoric genius, an insight that is purely human? And why does the theme of humans being tutored by higher beings recur so widely among Earth's indigenous cultures? Author and researcher Paul Wallace believes that insight into these questions might be gained by listening to the experience of those who have claimed contact with extraterrestrials, including those like the young lady from Mandloga, Ghana, who claimed to have lived for 3 years among the Mamiwota people. Might there be a link between their experiences and the giant leap forward experienced by humanity in the distant past?
It's intriguing to me that as well as this great leap forward in human evolution, possibly through an ET intervention, we also have the testimony of returnees. And I'm one person removed from two people who, after their close encounter, exhibited vastly improved and heightened cognitive abilities. And it wasn't a claim they made for themselves. It was actually discovered by friends who realized that they had notebooks full of complex calculus. So they didn't come back and start boasting, oh, this amazing thing has happened to me. often returnees don't talk about this aspect of the story because they don't want to become a case study. They don't want to be locked up. They don't want to be examined. They don't want to be prodded and probed to work out what's happened to them. But a friend of mine reported seeing the exercise books of a friend, and it was full of complex calculus. And the story is often that after these encounters, people's minds are just full of mathematics and physics and symbols. And I find that rather curious because it's a form of acquired savant syndrome. And that's a real phenomenon that is studied by neuroscientists, where some kind of an event in the brain or in the central nervous system, and the language they use is disinhibits aspects of the brain's capacities so that they can operate on a higher level. And so people after a central nervous system injury suddenly exhibit amazing ability in language or music or physics or all kind of other things. Returnees often report exactly that kind of experience. And it's part of the theme of the Mami Wata tradition, that this promise is given that if the young man will go with the Mami Wata person, there will be a payoff for them. They will come back with a higher consciousness. They will come back with a higher intellect and wealth and well-being. How intriguing that it is part of that narrative too.
The Book of Enoch tells a story that seems foreign to Western ears. With its reference to a non-human population resident on Earth, it appears at odds with the familiar stories of our mainstream religions. But to people like the Dogon tribe of Mali, with their memory of friends from the Sirius star system, or the people from Africa and Caribbean cultures familiar with Mami Wata, many of its themes were strangely familiar. Those who had brought reports of contact with Mami Wata people and other returnees around the earth may find comfort knowing that this generation is not the first to claim abduction by a non-human presence on planet Earth. If we can listen with respect to our mythologies and to the stories of those who claim to be contactees and returnees, what new insights might we then gain about humanity's place in the cosmos? Please let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Thanks for watching The Fifth Time. This video is in association with Paul Wallace. Author and researcher Paul Wallace probes the world's ancient mythologies for clues about the origins of the human race and has published several books in the field of mysticism and spirituality. In the last decade, his work has probed the world's ancient mythologies for the insights they hold on our origins as a species and our potential as human beings. Paul's work in church ministry has included training pastors in the interpretation of biblical texts, working as a troubleshooter for communities of faith, and serving as an archdeacon in the Anglican Church in Australia. His background as a senior churchman makes it all the more surprising that Paul's latest book argues that human origins lie in our prehistoric contact with extraterrestrial species. Go to www.paulanthonywallace.com for information about Paul and his books. You can find Paul on the Paul Wallace channel on YouTube, also linked below. Thanks for watching The Fifth Kind. If you like our videos and would like to see more, click the big red button to subscribe. It's free and really does help us out. If you would like to support this channel and get involved in new video ideas, please check out our Patreon page, also linked within the description.